Developing Independence of Mind Through Virtue was a talk presented by Amanda Butler at the Gutenberg 2024 Education Conference, titled The Independent Mind. Amanda Butler is Vice President of Training and Support with Classical Conversations. We hope you enjoy this presentation. Due to technical difficulties, the entirety of this talk is not available.
All right, good morning. So before we get started, would you mind if we pray together? Would you mind if we stand up? And then would you also mind if we use the word trespasses? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power. Thank you. Praise be to God. Ah, good. All right. So I'd like to, in good teaching form, feel like we need a review of yesterday before we dig into today, give you a little bit of circumstance, help us wrap our minds back around where we were. So Chris started us out by thinking about independence of mind and how impossible it is. Thank you. And then he told, oh, there you are, back there. Awesome. Thank you. That's the clicker. Good. And that what we want to do with independence of mind, because we can't actually be independent, because as Andrea helped us see, we have been given the mind of Christ, which is his mind, so we're not independent from him. But the ability to discern between the true and false, good and bad, and then I'm going to add my own little twist, to be inspired or moved to action by the beautiful. Thank you, Chris. Then Andrea came and spoke to us, and what I heard from that was that we want to train discernment and taste through three avenues: the head, the chest, and the belly, or the gut, belly, gut, stomach, however you want to say that. And so you also want to give rewards through the thing that you're training. So the head, do you remember? What does the head want? Intellect. So it's got its own reward, right? And then the chest wants what? Honor. So it's the good job. Well done, good and faithful servant. And then what does the belly want? What? Pleasure. And I just want to be super clear. Did we have bellies before the fall? Yes, we did. Yeah, the picture shows that. So we did. So our belly's bad. Louder. Is pleasure bad? Is pleasure sin? No. Good. All right. Awesome. We'll talk more about that in a minute. So then we broke and we had our lovely discussions about propaganda. And what I took from that was that the enemy uses technology to substitute the true good and beautiful for nationalism or, let's see, denominationalism or environmentalism or all kinds of isms. I think propaganda and an ism fit together really well in my mind. That's how those are linked for me. So then after that, we broke up into our workshops, right? And some of you got to think about science. Some of you got to think about attending. Some of you got to think more about relating to parents. And then we talked about math, which is one of my most favorite things to talk about. We talked about using comparison and definition to help students regain their independence in the classroom. So how could we do that? And Ben Davies came in the evening. Do you recall? This was the crown of the day. And what I remember from him is that the solution to all of these problems is Christ. Praise be to God. Praise be to God. So while we're filling our minds and enlivening our chests, and I'm sure have a lot of good, pleasurable conversations and good food, at the end of the day, the battle is not ours. It belongs to the Lord. And as we cooperate with him, we get to do that with him. But the result is not my responsibility, it's his. And so I can stand in front of my students and I can have so much fun with them. And I can be okay that I'm not perfect. And I can be okay that I don't have all the answers. And I can be okay that I stumble over my words or I'm trying to do a new sort of way to present information, because it's not mine. It's the Lord's. He loves you and your students far more than you could ever love yourself or love your students. And that gives me freedom to be able to do what I'm really good at and what I was made to do, which is to teach. So, now we're up to today. And I want to ask you a question. How many of you have brought a baby home? Raise your hand. Excellent. Most of you have brought a baby home. So, others of you know what babies are. You've seen them. So, when you bring a baby home from the hospital, what kind of environment do you bring it home to? What? Quiet. Good. What else? Safe. Good. What else? Comfortable. Yeah. Prepared for them. Excellent. Is it prepared for them just for that day of babyhood? No, actually, when you're mom and a daddy, like, what, I mean, you have bought so much stuff, right? And other people have bought you so much stuff. It was so funny. So our firstborn came home and we had so many diapers that it filled two closets, because I was a school teacher at the time. So everybody at school threw me a shower, which was awesome. And then our friends at church threw a shower, which was incredible. So we had so many diapers. So we had so many things that it lasted for days and days and days and days. And then we had a crib, but I don't know about you. In our house, Emily did not sleep in a crib in the beginning. She slept right next to me. But eventually she slept in a crib, right? So do I not buy the crib until she's ready to sleep in the crib? Not all. Like, we had the whole nursery set up and everything, right? So we brought our baby home to an environment that wasn't just ready for that moment, but it was ready for however long we could imagine that it would need to be. Of course, we're finite people, so we can't imagine too far, but we know what childhood looks like, so we tried our best. So that brings me to this picture. God brought his babies home too, didn't he? He created them. Of course, they weren't infant babies. They were adult-looking babies, which we still have those today, don't we? But it's a different kind of child baby. So they looked like adults, but they were not fully adults. They had just come into the world. They were just discovering things. And God puts them in the garden that he's prepared for them. And he says, here's the way that you can live here. This will work if you will do this. Because God had already put the whole rest of the world into an arrangement, right? He made gravity, but the planets have a choice about whether they obey gravity. No, planets don't have a choice. Do stars have a choice? No. Do leaves have a choice as to whether they obey gravity? No, they don't have a choice. So God had set all of these natural laws in place, and everything was following his laws because they don't have a choice. So then God puts Adam and Eve into the garden that he prepared for them. And how are they different from planets and leaves and bugs and all that sort of thing? They can make a choice, right? But he does the same thing for them that he did for the whole rest of the world. And he says, look, here's what's going to work best. When you come into the garden, eat from anything that you want, except this tree. Is he doing that to be mean? I'm going to test you, and I'm going to, don't eat from the tree. No, in the same way that we bring our babies home and we have a baby bed there, baby's not ready for the bed. Baby sleeps with mama until the baby's ready for the bed. It's the same thing. The tree's there. There'll be a time for the tree, but it's not right now. So stay away from it for right now. But of course, you know the story, and they don't follow what God laid out for them, the good plan that he had for them, and so they fall. So with independence of mind leading to virtue, my argument is that the virtues are those laws that God shared with them, that if they would walk in those, things would work. Virtues are not some new thing that we've created and made up. They were there from the beginning. It was part of the way that the world was supposed to work. So before I go much further, though, I want to tell you, I'm still learning about this. I'm not an expert. We're going to play with these ideas together. So it's going to take all of us to get a better understanding of this today. And so, this way. Awesome. So, my friend Jack, I got to go to his house this summer. It was very cool to see his house. His garden looks just like I expected. And his house looked nothing like what I expected. And then they told me why. It's because they got rid of all of his books. I know! I mean, they had to. Different things happened, and they sold the house and things like that. But when Jack lived there, there were books all the way up the staircase, books all up all the walls. And in fact, it was the books that held the house together. I'm not kidding, apparent from the story. And when Joy came to live there with him, that was one of the first things that she started cleaning up, and they actually had to refurbish the entire house and build it almost from scratch because the insides were falling down around the books. But anyway, so my friend Jack, I know, wouldn't that be an awesome place to live where I had that many books? So people need to be reminded more often than they need to be instructed. That's my premise today. I'm not going to instruct you. I'm just going to remind you of some things that you've already heard, because just like the Israelites, we forget stuff all the time. So we're all just together remembering the things that we already know, things that you're already doing. We're going to put names to them so that you know what it is you're doing when you're doing it going forward, because that helps. It helps you to focus or to put attention to that. So we're going to talk about the cardinal virtues. And I'm basing this off of Pieper's book, The Four Cardinal Virtues, and of course, Mere Christianity. Mere Christianity was where I started. He's got some chapters in there on the different verses, on the different virtues. And then from there, jumping off into looking at Pieper's book, do you have to agree with everything that you read in a book in order for the book? No, so we can read things and not agree with it all and still learn. Good. All right. Good. So the cardinal virtues are prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. And why do they call them cardinal? They call them cardinal because that's from the Latin, which means hinge. So the idea was that the ancients thought that these were the virtues that held everything else together and opened the door to all the other virtuous behavior, good behavior, that sort of thing. Again, that leads to my argument that I said before, that I really think that was the way that things were supposed to work from the beginning. So the word virtue, for those of you who know Latin, what are the first three letters in virtue? Vir, right? What's a vir? man. So I love to think about virtue as manliness, as that ideal man. And of course, who is that? Christ, yes. Good. And so we're thinking about ways that we can be Christ-like and how those relate to the independent mind. Oh, so I'm going to present very simplified versions of each of the virtues and definitions. I know it's not this simple, but it helps us to think about things in a simple way, to set an idea and then start expounding. Does that make good sense? So those of you who know a lot about the virtues, please don't be frustrated with me. I'm doing this on purpose so that it's easier for the rest of us to think about it, because just I told you I'm new at this too. I'm wrestling with these ideas. Good. So developing and maintaining an independent mind requires understanding reality and making decisions. Well, that seems simple, right? Not really. We call this one Okay, there we go. Oh, and now it's too far. Okay. Technology man. There we go. All right, we call this one prudence. And the reason why I have that image up there is because I really love the way that people describe the idea of prudence. It's this pre-existing form of all good deeds. So how many of you have ever drawn a picture or painted something or created some kind of artistic something? And by artistic, I'm using a very wide definition. Good. Okay. So immediately before you put the pen to the paper, what's happening in your brain, in your head? Yes, you can. And it's amazing, isn't it? Yes, that happens to me. And then I start putting the pen to paper and it looks nothing like what it was up here in the noodle, right? So the idea of prudence is everything that you're doing in your brain up until when you put the pencil to the paper. So prudence is all up in the noodle. Does that make good sense? That's why we call it pre-existing, because it hasn't been embodied or put out on paper. It's a perfected, right, because it's that ideal that's in your head, perfected practical decision-making based on God's reality applied to a specific situation. That's just a lot of words. So, in other words, what it's saying is that you have a specific thing that you are, a situation that you are thinking about, and after you think about it, you are going to make a decision. All of that is included in prudence, but you have nothing to show for it yet. Got it? So I have a lovely little artistic impression in my head of a beautiful tree, right? It's this symbolic, abstract idea-ness of a beautiful idea-ness of a tree. I made a new word, idea-ness. Okay, so two parts. So we've got the thinking part and the deciding part, like I talked about. So what's really important about the thinking part is all of these little pieces or steps that you want to go through. And this is going to be important later when we talk about how to practice prudence. The first thing that you want to do is make sure that you have true memories. How many of you vaguely remember something from your childhood because somebody's told you the story? Or and then you go to a family reunion or a funeral or a wedding and you're telling the story because that's the story, right? That's the story. And great Aunt Bertha says, "Baby, that's not what happened at all." You're like, "Oh man, I thought." Or because we're children, we perceive that as a child does, but then when we grow up, we're like, "Oh, that actually wasn't like that at all. It was really more like this." So this idea of true memories is part of the thinking when you are being prudent, is that you are reviewing even the memory that you have, the grammar, if I could use that word from the trivium, those presuppositions in your mind. You're thinking through them and saying, ah, is that true? Is that false? There's the independence of mind right there, right? The word true. You're assessing them. And so with assessment, what I mean there is what went well with the prior decision and what needed to be improved. So I'm thinking about the facts of things as related to the specific circumstance. And then I'm thinking, have I ever done a circumstance like that before? Have I ever been there before? Have I ever made a decision related to that before? And if I have, how did that decision work? Do you see how that's still all up in the noodle? But it's distinct from the memory. Now you're assessing what you've done before. You're not making any assumptions. And this is where I really struggle because, oh, wait, it's that article that we read for our breakouts this afternoon. That impulse to immediately have a thought, you got to break that. You need to think about that or be aware of whatever your gut reaction is going to go with. So no assumptions. You want to be objective about the circumstance. Wow, this feels like it's taking a really long time, doesn't it? This all these steps, right? But you want to think about the circumstances. Where am I? What am I doing? What actually did she say? What actually was her facial expression? Boy, how many times do we not do that? And then you want to be open-minded and teachable. Because, of course, your resident tutor is in there talking to you, the Holy Spirit, and saying, hey, think about it like this, or here's what you need to ponder, or here's a question to think on. All of that happens when you're being prudently thoughtful. Does that take some time? Absolutely, that takes some time. How many of us take that much time to think about a decision? Not me. I mean, I like to make just quick decisions. I actually brag about how fast I can make a decision. Did I tell you I'm still working through this? So after taking in that inventory, after thinking through all of those things, then the next thing I need to do is make a decision. I'm going to sort, and then I'm going to elocute. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to decide something. Again, it's in my head. Making that decision, I need to, as I'm making the decision with godly prudence, what I want to be doing is aiming for the realization of the good, God's reality, God's goodness, not my own desire or want of goodness. That the real solution is an action. Even though I'm thinking about it, my decision needs to be some kind of action. Does that make good sense? I'm not deciding. I'm deciding to do something or I'm deciding to not do something. I'm not just sitting there thinking forever, which we do, don't we? Especially people like us. We just like to think. And then we also, and part of deciding is acknowledging that there's going to be a risk involved and being okay with that. So going through all of those things, we're still just on the first of four. So Pieper talks, prudence lays the groundwork for the manly, did you see that word again? I like that. Manly and noble attitudes of restraint, freedom, and affirmation instead of warnings and interdictions. So when I first said the word prudence, did any of you have an idea or a picture that popped into your mind? Nobody thought about any kind of prude, little grumpy Puritan lady? Really? Okay, thank you. I'm like, wow, guys, come on, let's wake up. Yeah, thank you. So that picture is not prudence. Prudence is actually this idea of manly and noble with a idea of good restraint, freedom, and affirmation. It's completely flipped from what the world has told us that prudence is. Prudence is a good thing. It's not this. This is actually the opposite, because if you're doing this, or if someone...
That was Developing Independence of Mind Through Virtue by Amanda Butler. You've been listening to a recording provided by Gutenberg College. You can find more information about Gutenberg College on our website, at www.gutenberg.edu. Any broadcast or retransmission of this recording without the express written permission of Gutenberg College and the conference speaker is prohibited. Thank you for listening.